This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
Well, quite a bit of news today. Some good, some bad, all interesting. And one story that has, to some extent, slipped under the radar screen for the last few hours, but I don't think will be at all under the radar screen come tomorrow, is this situation involving Sean Puff Daddy Combs, in which he has had two of his homes, at least, raided, his homes in Los Angeles and Miami. And this was a raid done by the feds. The search has gone on into the night. And this can't be good for him. Guy that's covered quite a few criminal investigations and trials over the years and is a long-studied student of the music of Sean Puff Daddy Combs is Dominic Carter, veteran broadcast journalist. Dominic, you always have a good instinct for this stuff. What's your take on what this raid means for Combs here?
Well, it depends on how we define end, but he may be at the end. The more things change, the more they stay mm-hmm. the same. So for people that don't know how Sean Combs' career started, he, in New York, was going around doing local events, right, with up-and-coming rappers. And he did one at the City College of New York. And I think I was in Israel at the time, and we had just landed when the headlines broke. And there was a stampede at City College in New York City. And two or three people lost their lives.
Wow.
They literally were stomped to death. And he was the organizer of the event, and he lawyered up with some of the best lawyers in New York City, and he walked from the situation. But he's not going to walk from this one. Keep in mind that for his home to be searched, two homes,
right?
They know what they're looking for, and a judge, a federal judge, signed off on this. And a federal judge is not going to sign off on something like this unless the evidence was presented to the judge to warrant the execution of a search warrant.
Now, obviously, generally, the FBI doesn't send out press releases about why they're searching people's homes or what they're looking for. But what we're hearing is the word sex trafficking.
Of course.
In the context of this, you know, he recently made some headlines by coming to an out-of-court settlement with a woman that was suing him for sexual abuse. You know, we've seen with the Me Too movement a lot of instances of things going a little bit too far. I think everybody would acknowledge that, meaning in terms of certain accusations being given weight that in some cases I don't think they necessarily should. This seems to be, if you're connecting the dots here, in all likelihood tied to that kind of same activity, right?
Well, not just that. If we're being honest about this situation, Frank, it comes with the culture, the rap culture of taking advantage of some women sexually, and you know the groupies and so on. But it's been alleged that he's got some very weird sexual appetites. I don't know if it's along the situation of a R. Kelly, and you would think that they all would have learned from R. Kelly and Bill Cosby, but apparently when they opened up the law where you can go back, but for the feds to raid his homes, what that says to me, and I've covered the federal courts as an in-bed reporter,
oh, I know,
that means that he's about to go down. When I say go down, be arrested. I don't know when, but it sounds like it's coming.
So they said he was aboard his private jet when Homeland Security rolled up at around 3 p.m. Pacific time on Monday, a couple of hours after the raids at his home got underway, that witnesses saw Diddy and some other people stopped by the feds after he was getting off his private jet. Now, when you say an arrest is coming, you think we're talking a matter of 20 hours, days, weeks, months?
Maybe months. But keep in mind, to arrest a celebrity like him it does not necessarily mean conviction,
mm-hmm.
because they come in with the best lawyers money can buy, and it makes it difficult for the feds. But for both of his homes or two of his homes to be raided, that means they know exactly what they're looking for, and it's a strong indication that Mr. Combs is about to go down.
Last question I'm going to ask you, not at all related to this, but there's some data coming out which shows that men are very lonely and very disconnected. And we've seen a lot of polls along these lines that men are facing sort of a sociological crisis here, where there's this pandemic of loneliness. And people may say, oh, boo-hoo, what's the big deal? But they say that this could be leading to other destructive behaviors like alcohol consumption, drugs, and the like. You've been a man, I think, most of your life. You've also been an observer of the human condition your whole life. What do you make of this? What's causing this uptick in loneliness among men? Are you lonely?
I think I'm far from lonely.
Yeah. Okay, good. We hang out.
Yes. I don't know. Maybe it's COVID related. You know, it's funny, as you were mentioning, Sean Puffy, I'm looking at the Fox News channel. They're showing video, and some of those agents had their weapons out, the rifles and so on.
Oh, but, yeah. Although, yeah. They raid your house. They mean business.
Yeah, they're not joking around. So I don't have an answer for that. Why do you think?
You got me. I think maybe this culture of men being blamed for all the world's problems doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily help. I think... I don't know. I think obviously electronics is something that that always plays a role. People becoming more and more tied to connecting with people through a screen rather than in real life.
But why men and not women?
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. That's what I was hoping you would have an answer for. I've got questions, not answers, Dominic.
I see. But boy, these agents were not joking
around. That's for sure. That is for sure. Yeah, and not just the FBI, but the Department of Homeland Security. So when you have multiple federal agencies involved here,
this is only speculation, but this sounds like it's pulled from the R. Kelly playbook, where he was just taken down in federal court and is in federal prison. And you know, I don't know, all types of stories are out there as it relates to Mr. Combs, from males, from females, that he may be reportedly bisexual. Some say he's gay, some say he's straight. But all types of allegations. And when the feds are moving from rumor, from innuendo, to raiding your homes, the clock, the countdown to arrest has begun. I don't know when, but believe me, it has started.
Yeah. Dominic Carter, thank you very much. Appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow.
So are we lonely? We're both lonely.
I'm not lonely. But I worry about you sometimes, you know? You're walking around by yourself wearing that suit and tie all
talking
day long.
To myself.
Exactly. Dominic Carter, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, if you want to comment on either of those two scenarios, either the loneliness problem specifically among men or this raid of Sean Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, whatever his name is these days, his house, you're welcome to call in at 800-848-9222. You know, the other thing I wonder, and this is not at all important in the grand scheme of things, but it is something that I think every radio station is going to have to face down the line, a question that everybody's going to have to face down the line. And that's, let's say, and again, I'm really jumping the gun here, but let's say he is charged with serious crimes. And let's say, and again, I want to be clear, he hasn't been charged with anything as far as we know. And even if he has been charged, he is entitled to the presumption of innocence. Even if he is, if he's convicted of serious crimes, here is a guy that has had some great music over the years and done some other interesting work in terms of the popular culture. Do you think radio stations should stop playing his music? Now, we faced this question before when Michael Jackson was on trial for child molestation, when Gary Glitter was arrested for child pornography, when different people, different musicians, obviously the music that Phil Spector has been involved in has taken on a whole new light in light of, his scandals. We face these questions about artists and their persona versus their artistry before. My answer is always no. You have to separate the art from the artist. And sometimes it can be difficult, but I don't think you should judge a work of art, a painting, a sculpture, a movie, a radio show, a piece of music, and view it differently based on the person that created it. I mean, if you found out that Michelangelo was all of a sudden a pedophile, does that make David any less of a beautiful piece of art worthy of being celebrated? If you found out that Da Vinci was torturing animals to death, and again, I don't believe that Michelangelo or Da Vinci was doing anything like that, would that make the Mona Lisa any worthy of being in a museum? I don't think so. Obviously, when you have people that are living, like Dominic mentioned, Bill Cosby, R. Kelly, and in this case, Sean Combs, it's different because there is a, depending on what kind of deal people have, these artists do make money depending on where, you know, how many people are watching their movies or listening to their songs and so forth. So maybe that's, there's an element of that, is you don't want to patronize someone's artistry if that's going to mean them having more money. So I don't know. My view is always generally separate the art from the artist. 800-848-9222 if you agree or disagree. Tony, you have an opinion on that? If somebody does something really crummy, whether it's criminal or whether it's just distasteful, do you think that their music, their movies, their whatever should stop being played on the radio or shown on TV?
It should be separated. And if that was the case, there'd be a lot of people's music and movies and TV shows would not be shown anymore.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. And by the way, sometimes they do that. When Donald Trump, I mean, I can't even believe that they put Donald Trump in the same category as folks like Bill Cosby or O.J. Simpson. But when Donald Trump became controversial, they actually re-edited his scene in Home Alone 2 out. When Kevin Spacey, and by the way, Kevin Spacey was exonerated, but when Kevin Spacey was charged with very serious accusations, they edited him out of a really interesting movie called All the Money in the World and replaced all of his scenes that were already shot with Christopher Plummer. Now, I recognize there's an element of commercialism there that you don't necessarily want to you're not sure if an audience is going to respond to someone that's accused of the kind of things that Kevin Spacey was. But we're going to keep an eye on this federal raid into Sean Combs's homes in L.A. and Miami. I do tend to think Dominic is right. I tend to think that criminal charges are forthcoming. When the feds make a show of force like this and publicly go after someone's homes in two different cities simultaneously with weapons, and when they stop someone after a private jet, that's no joke. Again, I don't like to jump to conclusions or assume guilt, but it'll be interesting to see where this goes. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Let me tell you what's coming up. I'm very excited about this. Dr. Jay Bhattacharya is going to be here. Dr. Jay Bhattacharya is not only one of the smartest people in the world, a trained economist and a medical doctor, but he's also a professor, and he is one of the people that's responsible for this free speech case that the Supreme Court is now considering. And I talked about it a little last week. If you heard where the justices seem to be leading, with the exception of Sam Alito, they seem to be leaning in favor of the government. I'll get into it with Dr. Bhattacharya in just a few minutes. But it's a really interesting case. I think it has the potential to be one of the most important First Amendment cases of all time. And it might be the most important First Amendment case right now because of the nexus between technology, free speech, and the government's role in policing free speech or attempting to police free speech. We'll get into it with Dr. Bhattacharya in about 10 minutes. It's always great to have him on the program. 800-848-9222. Eddie is in Babylon. Hi, Eddie.
Oh, that was quick. Hi, Frank. A personal experience. Phil Collins, I love his movie. Not his movie, his music, especially, you know, Something in the Air Tonight and that drum riff. Doom. Well, an ex-girlfriend went out with a long time, knew her sister, an FBI agent in Seattle, was in the pedophile division. They were always after trying to catch Phil Collins in a limo with a young boy. That was always one of her things her division was after. You know, nothing became of it. You never heard anything of it. But this is something that they kind of purported as fact. It changed my feelings about Phil Collins a bit whenever I saw an image of him, but always loved the music, you know, the way the music has you feel. It's your mind over, you know, other aspects of morality. What's you know, music as an art does to you when you see it and feel it. It's distinct from the person, because if you met Phil and talked to him, you know, you might say he's a jerk, or it's, you know, politician, the same thing, but they have a talent that you know, it's an art that makes us feel and see in different things that we connect our life to. Thanks for picking up for
Yeah, Eddie, really, thank really you. I agree with you. I think, in my view, you do have to separate the two. Now, sometimes I know some people that can't. You know, I have a friend who was always very into Woody Allen movies, and he watched the documentary involving Woody Allen's daughter, and he believed that she was telling the truth about being molested by Woody Allen. And basically he said, I can't watch a Woody Allen movie anymore. He said, when I watch it, and I don't feel this way, I want to be clear. But he said, when I watch it, I just think of the evil, grotesque, disgusting things that he did to his daughter. And it totally takes me out of the film. I get it. All right. I mean, sometimes you have an instinctual revulsion to a person when you see them on screen. A painting, a song, that's a little bit different. A little bit different. I think it is. I think it is. And, you know, other people may not. 800. I'm not a big advocate of urging boycotts of anything. I mean, we still play all the canceled people on this show. 800-848-9222. Norman is in Brooklyn. Hello, Norman.
Hey, Frank. Yeah, I was thinking, yeah, I believe the artist and the work have to be separate. I was thinking of two cases, Richard Wagner. Mm. You know, I mean, they wouldn't play his music in Israel for many, many years because he was a Nazi. And then I was thinking of Thomas Edison. You know, I mean, created the wonderful electricity, and on the other hand, electrocuted poor Topsy to death.
Yeah.
Topsy the elephant.
Yeah, well, I think in the case of Edison is a little bit different because it's more science than art. But you could easily, I think the Wagner example is a good one. And some other people, while, you know, may feel similarly about Roger Waters as well. You could easily go the rest of your life without listening to Roger Waters' music or without listening to Wagner's music. You know, it's very difficult to go the rest of your life without utilizing any of Thomas Edison's inventions. And Thomas Edison is dead. I mean, are you really showing him up at all by using candlelight instead of incandescent light bulbs? I don't think so. Right. All right. Dr. Jay Bhattacharya joins us next. Very much looking forward to this conversation. What role does the government have in telling social media companies what to take down, or at least asking them what to take down? Dr. Jay Bhattacharya was one of the people, we've been following his case for a couple of years now, was one of the people that was banned from Twitter for the things that he was saying. And now he's one of the people that's responsible for this case coming to the Supreme Court. Where does free speech end? There are limits to free speech in this country. I can't, you know, go on the radio and say, you know, Matt Blaze murdered 6 children on his way into work tonight. Everybody show up to his house and burn it down and throw rocks at him as he walks in. You can't do that. Right. That is, you know, basically, you know, not only is it defamation, but it's potentially inciting a riot. So there are limits to free speech in this country, even with the First Amendment. Do those limits include allowing the government to tell social media companies what posts they should take down? My answer is absolutely not. I think the lower court ruling on this was right on the money. And I apparently am at odds with the Supreme Court. Now, they may throw us a curveball. You never know with those Supremes. But based on the questioning when this case came up last week, not looking good. Not looking good for those of us that prefer a more, a broader view of what the First Amendment is about. And it's looking very good for people like Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, who don't want the First Amendment to hamstring the actions of the government. Dr. Jay Bhattacharya joins us straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is Greg Kelly. To my friends in the construction business, if you've been injured on the job, make just one call to the Construction Accident Lawyers at the law offices of Darren T. Moore. With hundreds of five-star reviews, they fight for more justice for every client and have secured millions of dollars in compensation for New York construction workers. Call 888-444-ATTY. That's 888-444-2889 for a free consultation. More diligence, more persistence, and more justice.
Prior results don't guarantee similar outcomes.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Of course, is Lulu singing To Sir With Love, which is, of course, from the film To Sir With Love. A lot of people don't know this, but To Sir With Love was actually censored by colonial government in, I think, South Africa because it was considered too explosive. And there were also South African publications that banned the film, claiming it was offensive to see a black male teaching a class of white children. Now, we look back at that and we think, how crazy is that? How crazy is it that a wonderful film like this, which is worth watching just for the song alone, would ever be censored anywhere, right? There's nothing offensive. There's nothing obscene about the movie at all. I wonder how people are going to view the debates that we are having now about social media. It is not every day you get to interview a man who is a foremost professor of economics. It's not every day you get to interview a gentleman who is one of the foremost medical researchers and accomplished academicians of our time. And it's not every day you get to interview a man whose tweets have caused one of the most consequential Supreme Court cases in our lifetime. But it's even rarer when all three of those men happen to be the same person. And that is the case right now. I'm very happy to welcome back to the program professor of medicine and economics, among other things. We only have a 4-hour show. I'm not going to read all his titles. Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. Dr. Bhattacharya, it's a pleasure to talk to you again.
Frank, what an introduction. So glad to talk to you, too.
So I spoke a little bit about the Supreme Court case last week, and I thought it was very alarming, for instance, that Justice Jackson was so overt in what she was saying in the discussion with the Solicitor General from Louisiana about the First Amendment and what the consequences of this would be. This was Justice Jackson.
My biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods.
A lot of folks reacted to this segment and said, look, of course the government has the ability to communicate with social media companies to let them know that there's misinformation on their platform. You were, along with some other very controversial people, sort of the linchpin of this. Let's back it up a couple of years if we can. Explain to folks what happened to you, what you were putting out there on social media, what Twitter found to be, or the government found to be, offensive, and how this has now ended up at the Supreme Court.
Sure. So in October 2020, I wrote with Sunetra Gupta of Oxford University and Martin Kulldorff of Harvard, the Great Barrington Declaration. Longtime listeners of yours will know about it because you actually uncensored me, Frank, by having me on the show.
Dr. Kulldorff as well. But you know, he was a regular on that topic as well.
Yeah. So, but not that many places had us on. It turns out that 4 days after we wrote the declaration, the head of the NIH wrote to Tony Fauci calling for a devastating takedown. Google censored the declaration in search terms. Facebook took down the declaration's main page. Later on, when I spoke at a policy conference organized by Governor DeSantis, I was speaking directly to the governor, who's filmed. He asked me about whether there was any evidence that masking children did any good. I told him no. YouTube took down that video. The social media companies systematically suppressed my points of view, like scientifically backed points of view on how best to manage the pandemic. A lot of people, as a result, didn't know that there was tremendous controversy among scientists, that in fact the lockdowns, the school closures, all that nonsense we went through actually wasn't like unanimously supported by scientists. In fact, a lot of scientists, probably even the majority of scientists, disagreed. They were just silenced by the threat of the head of the NIH basically coming after them. And social media concurred, at least that's so I thought. In a lawsuit that I am a plaintiff called the Missouri versus Biden case, brought by the Missouri and Louisiana Attorney General's office, it turns out it's not just social media companies that were doing it on their own. They were doing it at the behest of the federal government. The federal government, the NIH, the CDC, the Surgeon General's office, the White House itself went to social media companies and told them, you should censor these people and these ideas. And they did it quietly behind the scenes. I heard that quote from Justice Jackson live, actually. I was at that Supreme Court hearing. I was absolutely stunned by it. I mean, if the First Amendment doesn't hamstring government, it literally says Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. What is it for? It's the reason to hamstring government in that way is because that is a fundamental civil right that the government should never violate. Of course, it should be hamstrung from violating fundamental civil rights. So I thought.
Now, obviously, I agree with you completely on this, but there are going to be some folks that say, look, Dr. Bhattacharya is a respected professional, a respected academic, and a respected economist and a medical professional. If he were to go on Twitter and say something crazy and harmful, which, by the way, some people said your position on masking, even though I think it's largely been borne out, they say that was harmful. But if you were to go out on social media and say, drinking bleach could make sure that you don't get COVID, that would be something that some people may take seriously because of your bona fides and could cause a lot of people harm, maybe even to die. Why shouldn't the government have the ability to say to a social media company, hey, this is harmful content that you're allowing on your platform?
You know, Frank, the thing is that the government was the number one source of misinformation during the pandemic. We just talked about masks, on school closures, on whether there's immunity after you get COVID, whether the vaccine has side effects. on topic after topic after topic, whether the vaccine stops you from getting and spreading COVID, on topic after topic after topic, the number one source of misinformation during the pandemic, the ones that were most consequential, were put out by the government. The First Amendment protects us against government misinformation by allowing private citizens with expertise or even without expertise, but who just happen to be right, to counter the government. The government does not have a monopoly on the truth, and the presumption that the government has a monopoly on truth is kind of entirely counterfactual. You could see it during the pandemic. The other thing is, there was Justice Saxon. I don't know if you have this clip where she does this hypothetical about social media fad where kids jump out of windows, the taller and taller buildings, by challenging each other. And she says, well, you have to have the government has the ability to suppress that kind of misinformation because it kills people. You know, that kind of misinformation, like I'm saying you should drink bleach, that's actually pretty easy to counter, right? It's in the interest of basically everyone to counter it. You don't need the government to tell people not to drink bleach. Any person that tells you to drink bleach, other people who will be in social media will immediately jump on them and say, look, drinking bleach is a bad idea. Parents can tell kids not to jump out of windows. You don't need the government to tell you not to jump out of windows. What you need is private citizens to be able to tell the government, look, what you're saying is just absolute nonsense. You're hurting people. A lot of people are dead today, Frank, that would be alive had there been free speech during the pandemic.
Wow. Look, it's going to be interesting to see where this goes. So if I understand the legal history of this case, the lower level federal court ruled in that the government could not have this communication with social media companies. Then the circuit appeals court ruled the same thing. Now the Supreme Court is evaluating this based on the reaction, the verbal questions that several of the justices, not just Justice Jackson, but several of them were raising. It seems like the Supreme Court is going to go against the lower courts. Do you have any reason that people like me can be optimistic?
I mean, I came into that case convinced that there's no way the Supreme Court could rule against us. Mm-hmm. I thought it would be 9-0. That shows you how naive I am about courts. When you introduced me, I noticed you didn't say anything about any legal background because I don't have any. I was depressed walking out of the hearing because it sure sounded like several of the justices didn't understand the most basic thing about the First Amendment.
Right.
If Frank, I'll tell you, if we lose this case, the United States effectively doesn't have a First Amendment. If we lose this case, we are telling the American people that the government can censor at will, and they can do it behind closed doors where no one else would know about it. Right? It's the government tried to make a case that that if they lose the case, the government is will be unable to tell people basic facts. Well, the president has a bully pulpit. The CDC can put out whatever guidance it wants. Do it out in the open. Don't do it behind closed doors, acting like as if they're tyrants. Instead of that, why don't they just, if they want to counter misinformation, tell people the truth? If they're trustworthy, people will listen to them.
As far as the issue of censorship goes, some people are going to say that communication between the government and a social media company isn't censorship. They're going to say, look, they're not prohibiting Twitter from allowing Dr. Bhattacharya or Frank Morano's tweets to stay up there. They're just advising them that what they're putting out there is inaccurate, even though in your case, it's certainly not. Twitter could tell the government no, couldn't they?
I mean, in principle, they could, but the lower court dealt with this. When you have the FBI coming and telling you, take down this information, it's very difficult for a social media company to say no. When you have an agency or a White House that controls whether they can sue you for antitrust, whether they can regulate you out of existence, it's very difficult to say no. It's like what the lower court said about this is it's as if Al Capone were to come to your business asking for protection money. And
right.
And what do you say? In effect, the threat there is that's a nice business you got there. Wouldn't be shame if something were to happen to
right.
it. But that's essentially what the government was doing. And look, the government, it's not even theoretical. The government's suing Apple for antitrust. It's threatening Elon Musk for basically putting free speech back on Twitter. I mean, so none of this is theoretical. It actually happened. I mean, the principle, I guess they could say no, but it's very difficult to say no when an entity that could put you out of business says, take this down or else.
Right. Particularly, I mean, it's not one issue that the government has regulatory control over social media on. It's a multitude of issues. You saw the hearings recently, the threats of regulation of youth social media use, the threats of taking away things like Section 230 protection. There's certainly an argument to be made that Meta is a trust that could be broken up just like Apple. So if one wonders if any of these companies were to say no repeatedly to the government's request to censorship, how long they would be walking around with that nice business that is unmolested by the governmental Al Capone in this scenario. So as it stands now, Dr. Bhattacharya, when is the Supreme Court expected to rule? Are we talking weeks, months?
So we should know by June.
June.
We should have a ruling by June, yeah. And just to be clear, this is a ruling on a preliminary injunction. So, you know, that basically until the actual trial, the if we win, the Biden administration would not be allowed to censor. Whether we win or lose, we're still going to go back to the lower court and we'll still get our trial. There's still a lot more to discover about how the government censored, the mechanisms used, how widespread it was.
I'm so glad you clarified that, because I don't know that I even understood that completely. So even if the you guys lose in this case, that doesn't mean that the government can go right back to telling Twitter what to take down. That just means that the trial can go forward.
That's correct. Yeah. I mean, but I do think that if we lose this case and the Supreme Court essentially says until we have a trial result, we should be able, the government should be allowed to censor, that would be a really bad signal. That would send the signal to the government that it's completely wide open to censor. You know, just a lot of censorship happened during the last 4 years, even during up to in the run up to the election. Some censorship happened, like such as with the New York Post story on the Hunter Biden laptop. This essentially would change the election too, Frank. It would allow censorship activities by the Biden administration in full while a presidential election is going on.
Do you think that if the Supreme Court rules against you here, and I actually think it's against all of us that value free speech in social media and really everywhere, but do you think if they rule against you that this would also lead to these social media companies being much more careful and engaging in a sort of self-censorship even when not prodded by the government?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, I think we saw this in some of the discovery, some of the weaponization task force in the House. They interviewed people in Facebook, and what they found was evidence that Facebook essentially was they would say amongst themselves, "Look, the government's what's asking us to do violates the First Amendment, but we kind of ought to do it anyways, because if we don't, we won't be able to get X, Y, and Z legislative a priority that we want or regulatory priority that we want." Here you'll have direct threats by the Biden administration telling the social media companies censor or else. I mean, and sanctioned then by the Supreme Court, absolutely you get self-censorship.
Let me just briefly take advantage of your medical expertise. We've talked a lot about COVID shots and who should be getting them before. There was a debate among my neighbors yesterday about whether or not they should get the flu shot. Do you have a view on the flu shot at all? Do you think that's something people should get?
I mean, certainly people that are vulnerable, I think a flu shot is a wise thing to do. It's, it's a very different technology and much older and much better understood technology than the mRNA technology that the COVID shots have. And, I worked actually with the FDA on flu vaccine safety for a while. It's, I think, a pretty safe shot generally. The only issue with it is that if you guess wrong what strain of the flu is going to go around is any particular year, it may not be particularly effective. But I do think generally it's what's warranted to take.
Makes sense. Dr. Bhattacharya, I know how in demand you are. I have always appreciated the fact that you always kept us in mind and remembered us, the little people.
Hello, people. Thank you, Frank. I'm grateful to you that you had me on when it was difficult to get my word out.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, if you want to comment on any portion of our conversation, give me a call, 1-800-848-9222. I do agree with what Dr. Bhattacharya said there, that this really does demolish the First Amendment as we know it, if the Supreme Court rules against them here. So we'll see where we go from here. Fingers crossed, in my view. 800-848-9222. We'll take your call straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
In 1965, Vietnam seemed like just another foreign war. But it wasn't. It was different in many ways, and so were those who did the fighting. In World War II, the average age of the combat soldier was 26. In Vietnam, he was 19. 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 The heaviest fighting of the past 2 weeks continued today, 25 miles northwest of Saigon.
I wasn't really sure what was going on.
19. In Vietnam, the combat soldier typically served a 12-month tour of duty.
Love this song.
Exposed to hostile.
This song is 19. That's the name of it, by Paul Hardcastle. The song is decades old, but obviously it's talking about the. It's about 40 years old. I'm talking about Vietnam, but the song came out years after Vietnam was already over, and this song was actually introduced to me in terms of playing regularly. I had heard it, but it was never in my rotation, by Curtis Sliwa. It was, you know, he likes that synthetic pop electro music, and there's plenty in that song. And figured we would play it today because while he has not made any formal requests, today is Curtis Sliwa's 70th birthday. So we figured we would play a couple of songs that he was a fan of, or at least the type of music that that he was a fan of. So there's that. All right. 800-848-9222. If you want to comment on any portion of my discussion with Dr. Bhattacharya or my prior discussion with Dominic Carter. The one thing, a lot of you have been asking about our cat situation. So just to catch up real quick, I won't give you too much of the history because I know a lot of you listen regularly. We had three cats. Two of them died, leaving us with one cat, Prissy, who is the least friendly of the cats. She gets along well with my wife, but she's afraid of everybody else. So Prissy, we got another cat that we thought would keep her company, Ed, and Prissy did not react well to that at all. They didn't react well at all together. They would fight and they would argue. They had to be separated. And Prissy started urinating everything on everything, ruined rugs in multiple rooms, was urinating everywhere, and was really just not at all handling it well. Urinated on the chair in my wife's office. Bad situation overall. So unfortunately, it killed us both to do it, but we gave Ed to another couple, or another family that was looking to adopt a cat, and he's doing great over there. He's doing wonderfully. They keep in touch with us. They sent us pictures of him wearing a bow tie the other day. He's having a great time there, enjoying him. Ed is getting along with the other cat there. So two things happened in the last 2 days. On Sunday, my wife tells me that one of the animal rescue groups that she volunteers with, they're looking to foster a black cat. And my wife is such a sucker for these black cats. They're looking to foster a black cat, and it looks just like the black cat that we had, Bathsheba. This is a male. We had a female. And basically, this would be a foster that we would be under no obligation to adopt. They like you to adopt it, but my wife was asking my opinion. I said, look, you're the one that ends up cleaning up most of the cat urine anyway, so it's up to you. We'll see what you think. That was 2 days ago. Yesterday, Prissy went to the veterinarian for the first time. My wife was actually able to get her into a cat carrier, and she took her to the vet. And the key to getting her to the vet was gabapentin, this drug that several of you mentioned when Prissy and Ed were in the midst of their feud. She gave it to her beginning a day earlier, put it in some tuna juice and so forth, and she was calm enough to go to the vet and had a very pleasant vet visit. And, you know, she's only 7 or 8 years old, but I think she's 8, actually. And she's in good health, got some of her shots. And the vet told her that some cats go on gabapentin every day if they're particularly high strung, but that's not something my wife wanted to do. And I think she's right. You don't want to drug your cat every day. But if we end up getting this other cat to foster, who knows? Gabapentin may come back into the picture. All right. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Let me begin with Kevin. Hi, Kevin. What's on your mind?
Well, it's about Sean Puffy Combs.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know what the heck is Homeland Security doing with basically a legal issue.
Well, you know,
shouldn't they be out hunting terrorists?
Well, the Department of Homeland Security deals with legal cases all the time. I mean, they're basically another federal law enforcement agency. That's why, especially as it relates to sex trafficking, if there's any thought that some of this sex trafficking may have involved people brought into the country specifically for those purposes, that's very much in the domain of the Department of Homeland Security.
The second thing is, how long before they tie Trump into Sean?
I think that would be tough, Kevin. You know, it's funny. A year ago, I might have had a different answer because it was clear that at least some of these legal cases involving Trump were politically driven. But I think one of the things you're seeing is there's such a political backlash to these Trump prosecutions that, especially among right of center voters, his numbers have actually gone up. You know, I was at a family function over the weekend, and I don't want to say who said this to me, but someone said to me that they don't like Trump and were planning not to vote for Trump, but they're so turned off by what the DOJ and what the New York law enforcement authorities have done that they're going to vote for him just out of spite because they don't like what's being done. Another person yesterday said to me that they don't like Trump at all. I don't think they voted for him twice. And they said they think that what's happening now in multiple cases is ridiculous. And, you know, they're inclined to vote for him because of this. So I think if they tried to wrap Trump into yet another criminal case, I actually think it would not lose him any votes. I think it would actually help him gain a few votes. Kevin, thanks for the call. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. David is in the Bronx. Hi, David.
Yeah, good morning, Frank.
Morning.
Okay. You've asserted several times that your previous guest was correct in everything he said.
No, I didn't.
No, you did.
Hang on, basically, hang on. Masking yeah. among children. And the other issue that he raised, he said a lot of other things. Come on, Frank.
Well, you know, okay. He said a bunch of other things in that Barrington declaration that turned out not to be accurate or under dispute.
Well,
the other thing is.
Yeah. Okay. So let's say you're right. First of all, which I don't necessarily agree with that. I have to look at what everything was in that great Barrington declaration. But let's assume some stuff was inaccurate. Why should the government be in the business of nudging social media companies to take those posts down?
Okay. The government's role is to advise that this information is incorrect. And I would also note that the majority of that stuff happened under the Trump administration.
Oh,
so
absolutely.
He keeps mentioning the Biden administration like they're the only ones who had anything to do with it. The Trump administration was also involved. But the other thing is, and this is the important part, because he actually brought this up. This is about the restraining order that was put on by the Fifth Circuit. The Fifth Circuit basically told the Biden administration they're not allowed to talk to social media companies at all. That's what Judge Ketanji Brown was concerned about, because there are legitimate reasons for the government to communicate about disinformation with these companies. Whether they take their advice or not is something that you and I could argue about for hours.
Yeah, I raised that question, and I'm glad you I'm glad you mentioned that as well, because that's something that I certainly didn't have a full understanding of. So I'm glad both you and he brought up that this is about the TRO. It's not about whether they can do this. This case would still go to trial. So I'm glad you mentioned that, David, and I'm sorry I'm out of time. But I don't think it's appropriate for the government that has the ability to regulate something to tell, to make suggestions to that entity. You know, I use the argument at this radio station, you know, if they tell me, if the owner of this radio network were to tell me, you know what, you probably shouldn't play any, I don't like disco music. Do you think you're ever going to hear disco music on this radio station again, or on this show again? Of course not. Of course not. It's the same situation, because the owner of this radio network largely controls my livelihood. The United States government controls the future of these social media companies. So a suggestion isn't really a suggestion. It's a mandate. Help control the pet population. Get your dog or cat spayed or neutered.